The following presentation was recorded at a Christian-led education workshop. More information at clp.org.
All right, in this time period, I'll try to cover a variety of things. I might have alluded this morning, this is a bit frustrating because I want to touch on resources and a variety of things, and there's not time in 45 minutes to do a whole lot, but we'll do what we can. So on your outline, I'll just very, very briefly point out in the room numeral one here, sometimes when children aren't doing academically or maybe behaviorally what we would like them to do, sometimes it's not because they can't, but because they won't. And before we spend too much time finding special resources and special tutoring and so on, we do want to just make sure that it's not for one of these other reasons. And these are somewhat self-explanatory, so that's not a real subject here. So I'll just quickly point out that sometimes maybe school is not considered important. Sometimes there's a problem relating to the teacher, and the child doesn't want to work for the teacher. Sometimes the student feels that since we can't do everything, we won't do anything. Even adults are that way sometimes. And there can be other issues, maybe a strong will and so forth. But those are just on a list there for you to consider. I want to move on to more the area that the child maybe would like to. He would if he could. Sometimes he could if he would, and that's more of a will problem. But now, some reasons that they can't. Sometimes children can't do well, and it still might not be a learning problem. It might be an emotional thing. Maybe there's whatever, turmoil in the home, abuse, sickness, work, poverty, for a single parent home, whatever, or it could be at school. Maybe the child is not part of the clique. Maybe he feels that he's not wanted, that people don't like him, and he's all wrapped up in these turmoils. Or there could be personal attitudes of inadequacy, guilt, fear, whatever. And if these can be very, very real, and they actually make the child become more or less paralyzed, maybe not paralyzed, but that they can't focus on their work. And again, if it's really an emotional thing, well, it doesn't do a whole lot of good to do a lot of more clear explaining in how to do your math, if in fact it's a feeling issue. Maybe there are distractions of various kinds. There's all kinds of distractions that can be in the child's mind, either internal, daydreaming, etc. Maybe there's disorganization, clutter, inefficient procedures. I want to move on to some of the more specific areas. Maybe he's slow and uses up too much energy to do things like follow directions. And maybe then there is actually a difference in the way this child learns. Maybe he learns in a different way. And I'll talk more about those in a moment here. A child might be a visual thinker in a verbal environment. Our school curriculum is very much designed for verbal people, people that think and process primarily with words. And if you are primarily a person who thinks in pictures, if you're one of those people who can't understand something unless you can picture it, why, you may have difficulty with quite a bit of the school work. Or if you're a person who just has to almost handle something in order to understand it. Some years ago, we were discussing with the first and second grade teacher about rearranging some furniture to have a desk in the corner so that a child could work without distractions. And she thought maybe that would be a good idea, but she could not envision what that would look like until we actually moved the furniture. And so we, after school, we shifted this around, moved the furniture, and then she stood back and looked a bit and said, oh yeah, okay, that'll work. Now, I knew exactly what it would look like before we did that. It would not have been necessary to move the furniture for me, but for her, she had no clue what this would look like without seeing it. Now, I point that out just to simply remind us that some of us are very much word-based in our thinking. Some of us are very, almost strictly visual. And some of us are some of each. And it's interesting to to ponder. When you, let me just ask you, if you listen to a person talking or a preacher preaching or people telling about their day or whatever, how many of you most of the time are seeing something, you're picturing something? All right, put your hands up. And those of you who don't have your hands up, look around. Hold your hands up. All right, there are people like that. All right, now how many of you, well, you could maybe see something if you wanted to, but unless you decide to see something, you don't necessarily see anything. All right, look around. There are people like that. Now you need to be aware of that. And your students are the same way. Now it seems that for whatever reason, I have no idea why, but in the last 10, 15 years, 20 years, it seems that there are more and more and more people who are very much more visual. And some people, when they think, it's very much like almost watching a video or a story unplack or play before them. And if they can't see something, why, they can't think. Well, there can be physical problems. Many a teacher has wished that the parents would get their children to bed on Sunday night so they come back Monday morning ready to work. And many a teacher also has wished that parents would think a little bit more about nutritious lunches and especially snacks. That's a different subject. The slow child is who simply slow, learns the same way as other children learn, but needs more time. Might need some less work, might need extra help, but basically he can learn to read in the same way other children learn to read, but he needs more time. Now let's go into the area which is commonly called learning disabilities. Actually, sometimes people call it learning differences. That is, this child learns in ways differently than what most children learn. Now, on your paper there, I have a list of common symptoms. That is, these children usually are average or maybe above average intelligence. And often the minds are very, 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 very active. Not all these symptoms are present, but there are letter sound, reversals, figure ground difficulties, and so forth. And I'm going to show you a few pictures now that illustrate some of these things in a bit of a different way than they are in your paper. So there are, when it comes to learning, there are four major things we have to do. We have to take things in. Whether we hear them, whether we see them, whether we feel them, we have to somehow get it in. Then once it's in, then we have to think, make sense out of it, organize it, understand it. And then we have to remember it, store it, remember it. And then finally, if we really have it, we're supposed to be able to give it out either by talking, writing, building, doing, solving a problem, or whatever. Conceivably, you could take something in. This is probably the case with many autistic children. They might be able to take something in, but they cannot give it out again. And so let's look, first of all, at some of the input problems. Visually, we expect our children to be able to take things in through the eye. We call it reading. And one of the things they have to be able to do is to distinguish the difference between different shapes and different objects, and particularly different letters. Now, one of the common, let me just do something here first. What do you call this thing? This is generally, what's this called? Somebody just tell me. A book, right? And what is it now? It's still a book, right? Now, is it a book now? Sure, it's a book. And children aren't stupid. They learn that things are what they are. And a book is a book whether you lay it face down or face up or however. However, sometimes we expect them to do something like this. And let me give you this example. With these, the four letters, B, P, Q, and D. It's a little bit like telling children, see, they've learned that if something is something, it is that. But if I tell you that this is a book and this is a nook, all right, now let's try that. Ready? Say it. Okay, now let's call this cook. Ready? This is cook, book, and then this is took. All right, you ready? This is... You start wondering a little bit, what's this all about? This is rather confusing or meaningless. Well, you can understand why, at least with those four letters. Now, most children have a bit of trouble when they first face this, but some children don't get it. And actually, sometimes they really don't see the difference. And something that really helps with letters like that is anytime you can give children manipulatives. And that's why the old blocks that children used to play with letters and numbers on them, where they physically can pick up a block and handle it, helps them to manipulate. So something you can manipulate, picture, and see. The more senses you can use, it does help. Reversals are very common. Another kind of problem is what's called figure ground. The figure is the thing you're supposed to look at. The ground is the whole background around it. And so when the teacher's pointing to something on the chalkboard, the child's not supposed to be looking at the teacher's ear or nose or shoulder or hand, but supposed to be looking not even at the end of the finger, but at the part of the problem that's at the teacher's pointing to. Not the whole problem, just that part. Now, that seems very logical, but some children, when they look up there, it's all very busy. They look there, and there are many interesting things up there, and especially children who have great difficulty with this figure ground thing are really distracted by the clutter in the classroom. It's nice to have pretty things on the wall, but some classrooms are so loaded with attractive things on all four sides and sometimes even the ceiling that it's very much more interesting to be looking around at these things than it is at what's on the chalkboard, especially something as simple as something written there with chalk, just a word. But if you're aware of it, the figure ground, maybe the child has difficulty focusing, and you can be explaining something, pointing to it, and they might not be looking at what you're pointing to. They might be, you have to be alert to that, or they're even looking at it. Or looking at a page on a book, picking out the word on the page that they're supposed to be looking at. Other things are sometimes more attractive, especially illustrations are more attractive than what the pictures are. Pictures are fun, but there's also some valid arguments that children can almost pay better attention to stories with fewer illustrations in the book, because when you read a story, you ought to do some picturing of things that happen in the story. And if the pictures are all there for you, then somebody else creates a picture for you. Well, another visual one yet is judging distance. Some children do have trouble judging distance, and they're clumsy and knock things over easily. Now, the hearing is the same way. Auditory, the ear, taking in with the ear. Sometimes we think that children forget their sounds. But something to consider is, do they even hear the difference between the eh, for example, and the ah? So if you say, is it bet or is it bat? They might think you're saying, is it bet or is it bet? Now, what would you say if I ask you, is it bet or is it bet? Well, you would assume that the teacher knows the teacher's not stupid, so there must be something different. So what are you left with? Well, you guess, of course, you guess. One time you guess this way, and sometimes you guess it right. And is it bet or is it bet? And you say, bet. Teacher says, good. And so you thought, well, what the problem is that you're not even, just like some children are monotones and don't hear that they don't hear the difference in pitches, they might not be hearing the difference between closed vowel sounds. So before you think they're forgetting, you better check and see if they're actually hearing. How could you check that? Well, you could have them make the sound for you and see whether they can say the eh and the ah, or where they always say ah, ah, or where they say eh and eh, and see if they can hear the difference. Say, I'm going to give you three sounds, two will be alike, one's different. Which one is the different one? Say the eh, eh, ah, and see if they say that the third one is different. So before you think they're forgetting, see if they're actually hearing the difference. Can they discriminate between the sounds? That, by the way, is one of the values of parents reading their children the nursery rhymes and the little jingles. Those are, might be nonsense, hickory dickory dock. Those might be nonsense, but actually they're very serious business in training the child to hear sounds and to produce sounds and to reproduce sounds and to imitate sounds. And learning to recognize sounds is basic to being able to speak and to be able to read. And of course, children learn primarily by through play, through experimenting with things. The same thing is very true with sound in the figure ground. This is maybe more of a problem even than visually, where the child is supposed to be focusing on what you're explaining. But there are other things. There's a chalkboard scratching in the next room, a car going past on the road, some other child making a noise. And you know these children, they instantly go to where that other sound is. And it's hard to distinguish. Some years ago, I had a set of cassette tapes I got somewhere that gave some drill, and you could make up your own, where the teacher's voice just very calmly and clearly gave the children a series of things to do, such as take your paper and write number one in the top left corner. Now, below that, write number two and draw a circle around it. Now, at the same time that that happened, then there were other sounds on the tape, whether it was a dog barking or just other distracting sounds on the tape, but you're supposed to tune them out. You're not supposed to listen to them. And this was a series of about four different tapes, and each one got progressively more difficult because the sounds became either louder or more interesting. And the most difficult one involved the teacher giving directions, and it sounded like you were in a classroom with a lot of hubbub. And as soon as the teacher said what you were to do, the teacher said something like, write number three and put a circle around it. A student's voice said, did she say five or seven? And so, no, she said four. Well, she didn't say any of those, but she said three. And if you paid any attention at all to what those other voices said, you almost lost it. But somehow, we do have to train our children to, of all the noises in your world, listen to the voice of the shepherd, listen to the voice of the teacher. And you know as well as I, this is a big challenge. And sometimes these children just need a little quiet corner in the room to work. And then the auditory lag is where you're just a little bit behind. And so the class is going on to the next question, and then you're always asking a question about something that you've just moved on from. They're just not quite with you. They're behind you. Now, that's the input. With the processing, sometimes there's a problem with, once it has come in, there's a problem with making sense out of the material, with processing it. Excuse me. Check our time here for sure. And so, making sense out of it. One of the issues which you'll commonly face with these children is sequencing, remembering. We all know children who, if they're given three things to do, take out the garbage, feed the dog while you're out there, and then bring the container back in here and put it under the kitchen sink. Well, the garbage goes out. After a while, you see the child, and you say, where's the garbage container? I don't know. Did you feed the dog? No. What did you do? Well, yeah, I played with the dog. We had a good time. So the garbage went out. They played with the dog. Didn't remember to feed the dog or to bring the container back in. Now, that kind of thing transfers to school in solving three-step problems or do your work and then put the book here and so on. And with some people, it's not just that they forget or don't care. Some people have a real problem. Today, there's a term challenged. We talk about directionally challenged people and so on. And some of these kind of stay with us for life. Another one is the abstraction. Many of our school subjects involve understanding abstract concepts. And so, for example, if I told you that heat and measuring the amount of heat and measuring the temperature are two entirely different things. One has to do with measuring the kinetic energy. So a candle flame, for example, can be very hot. The other has to do with the amount of heat. And so that explains why you can't heat this room with a candle, but you certainly wouldn't want to put your finger in a candle flame. It'll burn your finger. Now, understanding a concept like that involves, well, how do you understand it? Maybe you can picture something. Some concepts are hard to picture, and it takes a while to get it. And some children, you really have to work with developing their understanding to develop concepts such as that. And then here is a big one. Many times these children have trouble tying together in the mind things that came in through the eye and the ear and the hand. Some children, if they hear something, if they hear a story told, they can tell you the story, they can answer questions, but they have great difficulty writing answers to questions. On the other hand, if they read it and it went in through the eye, they can maybe answer questions on paper, but they have great difficulty in answering verbal questions if you ask them to tell you about what they learned. Well, the brain, somehow, there are connections that need to be made there, and they should work together. And some children need extra practice to develop these different senses to work together. Someone was just telling me recently that they heard somebody arguing for the value of learning to use a keyboard for that reason. I've never done that, but they were saying that being able to look at a sheet of music, being able to use your fingers, and concentrating with your eyes on a sheet of notes, and using your fingers on the keyboard, and using the ear to listen to what you produce, it would be reasonable to think of how that would require your brain to work together. But there are other ways of having the eye, hands, and ear work together. And then some children just have difficulty connecting what they learn in school to what's outside of school or new information to the old. And then there's the memory, the short-term and long-term memory. Short-term memory is the kind that you have to actually focus on what you're thinking about, like remembering a phone number just long enough to dial it. Long-term, you have to do something to file it away. It's a mystery, of course, how that happens. And we all know those children that might know their math facts. They might learn something on Monday. Tuesday they have it. Wednesday it's gone. Thursday it's back again. Friday it's gone. Monday it's gone. Tuesday it's back again. Did you know anybody like that? You thought they knew it, but then they don't have it. But then after a while they do have it again. It seems it kind of goes by the day. Sometimes they have it. Sometimes they don't. This is a real challenge, and we don't have all the answers to these, but it's very important to understand, though, that if you can't, you can't. When you get a little older and you have these senior moments, and you don't have to be too old to have that somebody's name just doesn't quite come, or you forget that person's name, you can't remember it by trying harder. You might as well not try. It won't. You just relax. A couple hours later, all of a sudden, oh, sure, it's there. I see some head shaking. It's there. And with these children, if you at least understand this, why, it helps. And we don't make them feel guilty for not doing what they can't do, but we do. We can require them to practice exercises and do things to try to help them. And so with output, one kind of output is the speaking language. There are two major kinds of output. One is the spontaneous, where you get to talk about what you've learned. So you read a book, and you get to tell the story. Or you read a history lesson, and you can tell about what you read. What did you read? Well, I read about Columbus. He sailed to America. He sailed on three ships, or he had three ships, needing a pinch of the Santa Maria, and so forth. Now, if a person, that's spontaneous answering. Demand answering is where you answer questions. Did you read your lesson? Yes. Well, who was it about? Columbus. What did he do? Sail the ocean. What did he use? Planes? No, ships. What were their names? Nina the Pinch of Santa Maria. That's demand answering. Now, a person should be able to do both. But there are some people who had difficulty with the demand answering. You ask them, did you read your lesson? Yes. Who was it about? I don't know. Well, Was it about Columbus? Oh, yeah, I guess. Well, what did he do? I don't know. And you think they don't know anything. Did you read your letter? Yes. But then you find out later, you might hear them talking to somebody, and you find out they said, yeah, we read about this guy named Columbus. He sailed the ocean. He had three ships. And you say, wait, I thought you didn't know the answers. Well, no, he didn't know the answers. But if you allow him to, he can give you the whole thing. He either has to dump the whole file or you get nothing. Now, if you ever have children give oral book reports, you'll find these types of people sometimes. If you ask them to give a little summary of the book and tell you about the most interesting part, They either got to start at the beginning and give you the whole book or else not at all. And if you let them go, they'll stand up there and talk 45 minutes and tell you the whole story. Or not at all. But then, in the other case, there's a child who, if you ask them to tell you about the book, they're speechless. But they can answer every single question you ask. So I'm exaggerating a bit, I hope, but I think if you work with children, you know there are these two. And if the ability is missing, if one's missing, then you need to work more on the other to help develop that, because you ought to have both those strengths. Motor skills. These are vitally important. All children should develop fine motor skills. Cutting, pasting, tracing, coloring, stringing beads, playing jack, and then the large motor skills, hopping, skipping, jumping. The things that children normally learned growing up years ago, there is a neurological value in being able to move your body and your fingers and your hands in space. And sad to say, many children today are not developing these. And it's sad to see a child who can't dribble a ball, can't jump a rope, can't skip or hop or jump. These things have value beyond playing games. And with your child who has disabilities of some kind, one simple thing you can do is check out, does he in fact have these abilities? Can this child hop, skip, jump, dribble, jump rope, and jump, not just jump rope, but do the various kinds of things like two and then three. And if they can't do them, because some of the therapies involve just activities like that. There's a fascinating, you don't have to understand the neurological connection, but there is a connection between the motor skills, both fine and gross, and the ability to learn. And last of all, but not least, the directionality. This is one that maybe doesn't go away, but check, see if your child has it, and work on it if they don't. In, out, up, down, left, right. There's many an adult, and I won't ask you who you are. There's probably somebody in this room who doesn't know the difference between left and right. In just an intuitive way, many an adult has said, I learned how to tell my left hand because my one finger has a little more on it. And so when I think left, I say, yeah, that's left, and that's right. And I know a couple years ago, a school principal mentioned that when he's going down the road, if somebody says turn left, that's not helpful for him. He would not automatically know which way to turn. And if we know these things about our students, at least it helps us. We shouldn't say, well, if you just tried harder, if you wanted to, you would do it. He just doesn't want to. Maybe there are some real challenges here that they don't have. And if we're at least aware of it, it helps. It helps us. Let's look at a few practical helps. These are not catch-alls. These are just some practical things. Dictation is actually a skill that anybody should be able to do, but a child, both oral and written. So I'll give you a sentence. I'll say it one time, and then you say it back to me. Let's do this for real. Ready? Listen carefully. The little boy used a big stick to chase the cow into the barn. All right. Not all that hard. It shouldn't be. But there are some children who they would be doing very well to get the little boy out and would have trouble remembering anymore. Well, you can start short and add more. By the way, this is a good activity for anybody. It can be oral. Or it can be written and train them, I'll say it, once. And you can try to make a game out of it, see how long a sentence we can get. Don't use big complicated words, but and then say it once and see if you can write it down. It forces you to listen And then you are writing it. It's that visual thing, output. And then you could also try another one where you could show them a sentence, just flash it up, hold it up, and then have them say it to you, would be the visual with the spoken. And do allow your child to use a finger. Please don't smack the finger if the child wants to follow in the book. Some children need that finger to sometimes words actually move on the page, and some their eyes just wander all over. Or take a card like I have on your paper there. That's supposed to illustrate on your handout there. That's supposed to illustrate an index card with a little window cut out of it. And by simply sliding that over the text that you're reading, it makes a window for you to read the words. And if it's wide enough to cover a whole line, you can just slowly slide it down. It can also be used to help you develop tracking so that your eyes don't go back up again, so you don't get lazy, so you just move down the page. Practice sequence activities. You can make games out of it if you have to. First do this, second do this, third do this, and see if you can remember. There are various kinds of games. Some of these games are very valuable, like the following directions games, like the old Simon Says. Simon Says stand up, so everybody stands up. Sit down. Well, if you sit down, you're out, because Simon didn't say sit down. It forces you to focus and pay attention and be very quick, and that's an important skill for anyone. Practice answering orally. Jumping down to, let me just stay here. Gross motor skills, fine motor skills, I referred to already, and retelling stories, answering questions. Trace or copy designs. Whether you trace them or whether you lay them alongside and reproduce them. The ability to look at a shape and then reproduce it over here, not necessarily the same size, but the shape, there's something of value in developing the mind, the brain. In doing that, if necessary, use a digital clock to tell time. With some children, the whole concept of before and after and time is very, very difficult to get through the mind. And by all means, with mathematics, please provide things for your children to hold in their hands, manipulatives. Many times, for example, in teaching fractions, now this shows sticks, I'd more often use fraction pies, where you have a circle, and you have one full circle, that's your 1 over 1. The two semicircles are 1 over 2, 1 over 2. The three-thirds are 1 over 3, 1 over 3, 1 over 3. But whether you do them in, and these would be cut in pieces. But you can see here that by with your one-third, if you took three of these three-sixths, it would take three of the sixths to cover one of the thirds. And so when you say three-sixths, two-sixths equals one-third, this isn't some abstract concept. This isn't just something to remember. With some children, if you don't get them something to hold in their hands or to lay on top of each other, now some children can get it from just a picture. That's at least one step. But the ability to lay it on top is another step. And if I said something nonsense to you, if I said four smuckers is equal to seven slurfs. And then I ask you tomorrow, now, how many slurfs does it take for four smuckers? You'd say, what? And so it's like remembering nonsense and sounds. And to some children, that's about what fractions are. We're teaching something that's just, they're supposed to somehow remember these sounds that they heard yesterday. It doesn't really mean anything. But if they can actually lay 2/6 on top of 1/3. Oh, yeah, sure. Two small pieces of pie equals one larger one. And they now they might have it for life otherwise. And so that's just one example. But other things when it comes to ones, tens, and hundreds, there's various kinds of things you can have. You can have the 100 squares and the sticks, and you can use beads. And very just simple things, telling time, giving them something to handle. It gives them an opportunity to actually use their hands kinesthetically and their eyes and visual. It helps them to learn better, to get the concept. Many times when we think they're practicing their math. Maybe they're actually working with something, as far as they're concerned, is nonsense. And then provide workspace free from distractions, some kind of a booth. If they have that kind of a problem, oftentimes the way that your stuff looks in your workspace is also the way that stuff looks in your mind. And by helping them to have some external order, it does help to have the internal. Now, I'll be the first one to say that I understand there are those creative minds that think intuitively out there, and they don't necessarily think one, two, three. However, there is a discipline to keeping things in order. Break work down in small steps. There's a time for providing oral help. This is a great time for older children or classmates to practice service. If you need to read your assignment anyway, you can read it aloud to or with another student. Or they can read by turns, and one child reads five sentences, the other child one sentence. Provide oral help with some tests, especially with a content test like science and history. Many children, when they take a history test, it's a history test. With some children, when they get a history test, it's two tests. It's first a reading test, and secondly, a history. It's first a test to see whether they can read the questions and write the answers, and then if they have enough energy left, they use the history they learn. What I mean by that is that they have to use so much energy just reading the test and writing the answer that they have little energy left to think about the history that they heard. Whereas if you gave them the test orally or just helped them orally, they might know the answers instantly or almost immediately, and you might find out that they know all that history. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't teach them to read, but you do have to take into consideration their ability. Provide something on this level. The fastest way to learn to read is to read, once you learn the basics. And so many a child, if they're up there in grades 5, 6 and above, if you give them some nice, interesting children's books, that I'm talking about worthwhile children's books, ones that you yourself would enjoy reading, at the same time they enjoy that good book, they're also developing their reading ability. And here's a big one. Some children, if they have to copy all their problems over on paper, they use as much energy, as much mental energy, just copying the problems over as other children use doing the whole assignment. And so by photocopying the problems and allowing them to get right to work on solving them, you level the playing field for them. Or if they need to copy a lot of notes from the board, some children will use all their energy to get each word down on the paper and have no energy left to give any thought at all to what they're copying or what you're talking about. To them, history class consists of a painful experience of copying shapes from the board onto my paper and hoping I get them all right. So you need to know if a child has that difficulty, you can give him a copy of the notes. A couple of particular kinds of issues, we don't have time to go to these in any kind of detail, but the attention deficit person is often in his own world, and at home that might be fine, easy to babysit, but then when they get to school, they're supposed to come out of their world and come into your world. That makes a particular problem. And then, of course, the hyperactive one is its own issues. The autistic spectrum, these are children who have characteristic behaviors. They often walk on their toes, stimulate themselves by flapping their fingers. They're not able to communicate. And how many of you know a child who has some degree of autism? Wow. Now, those of you who are older know that 20 and 30 years ago, this was not the case. It was a rare thing that you could look it up in a reference book somewhere. I have no idea what causes it, but there are resources. I'll point out a couple books here shortly. And then there's a reactive attachment. You're more likely probably to run into this problem with foster children, adopted. But children who, when they were young, did not bond, don't expect these children to be able to perform and learn in school until that issue is taken care of. You need help to know how to do that. And then the fetal alcohol syndrome, again, if the mother was on alcohol, notice there's actually a different formation in the brain. It actually is formed differently. There are different features. And these children typically have issues that are predictable and need special attention. A few ideas on intervention. Don't deny the problem, accept the child. It's not going to go away. These children who can't are going to need some special help. Do work at developing character and discipline. Sometimes people don't do what they ought to do with these children, assuming that since they can't, they don't even try to develop routine character qualities in them. Don't be afraid of diagnosis. Don't expect any one thing to solve the whole problem. There's a place for medication. There's a place for psychological evaluation. There's no time, obviously, to talk about these. You need to find somebody who can provide the help. There's a place for various kinds of therapies. Does anybody do vision therapy in this part of the country? Do you know what I'm talking about? This doesn't have to do with 20/20. It has to do with tracking, eye tracking. There's a place for that, which you need to find out if there's a resource. There's various kinds of patterning. With the needs today, there are many kinds of things out there, and you need to... I have a few resources to accommodate needs. Obviously, there are special programs. Two major approaches. One is where you compensate. You say, well, this is a problem. Since the child can't read, then we read most of the material for him. And there's a place for that. But then the therapeutic approach is where you say, well, he has difficulty with this auditory discrimination, so we're going to work on solving that problem. One program that's been used with great success in many schools is a Barton Reading program used at all in Ontario. Who knows about it? Okay, it's a very basic one, a simple one. It involves the child handling things with its fingers, like these little tiles. It has training for the teacher. It has a book for the teacher. Fairly simple, straightforward. And there's information on your handout with some of these. So I'll just flip through here. Another one, there's a computer-based program out of Pennsylvania. If you want to see information on it, there's some folders up there on that called, it has children work together with their seeing, hearing, and the typing, and also speaking. And so let's just go through and finish up. A couple resource people. Again, this is on your paper. There is a sister in Pennsylvania who's just finished her training as a school psychologist. If you want information, you can get in touch with her. I'm not sure how much help she could give in Ontario. And there's another one. Again, this is on your paper. with some of the specific ones, there is material on the internet that gives you symptoms, suggestions of resources for various kinds of specific things like Asperger's. A few books, some of these are on sale, Helping Children with Special Needs. This is about an autistic child. There's a copy of it up here if you want to browse in it. It's fascinating having people grow up who were autistic, who are sometime able then to communicate and tell you what it's like being autistic. The Misunderstood Child is one that covers a broad spectrum of these issues and some ideas of dealing with them. And this is another one for teachers with the various ideas. And some of these samples are up here. You'd have to find your own resources for them. This is a good little book available through Continental Press. The information is on your handout with some practical suggestions for parents. You might find it interesting to browse through this to help these children. And last of all, let's look at how it feels. Would somebody please read that sentence for me?
It's a very simple sentence. It's me. Okay. Well, the problem is that this is the way a page of standard treatment for many children. They tend to reverse letters, flip them upside down, back and forth, and they also tend to not see the spaces necessary where you see them. They don't always put the spaces between words where you put them. This is what the sentence says. The big boy ran down the street with a little dog chasing him. He was screaming at the top of his voice.
Now, what they did was reversed Z's and made S's. Now, of course, I did it with, and as you can see there, a W can become an M, a B can become a G, and so forth. And imagine how you'd feel if I said, read that, actually, I should have done that in the handouts. I should have half one kind and half the other. And then when somebody else reads that sentence off, just like that, And you say, what? How did you do that? You'd start wondering what's wrong with you. Now, here's another one. Some people think those lines aren't parallel. And so they can't believe it until they check it out for themselves. Now, I put that on here to point out that some children actually look at a page of print, and the words actually move. And last of all, but not least, let's look at this one. How many of you see the face of the heifer up there? All right? Who doesn't? Now, those of you who don't, could if you wanted to, you're just not buying one of those. And if you stare at that and you try, you get the feeling of not feeling. If you don't, you know, right time comes up, you don't get that. You don't stand for reasons. But you're not buying one. Well, to help you. Now, some people still won't get it, but this is on your paper, too. This is the one eye. Here's the other eye. Here's the nostril of the little heifer right there. There's the left ear. The right ear's in there. This is kind of the neck here. And the rest is just an ink blot. Who sees it now? Who still doesn't see it? It's okay. All right. So they have a little feeling. See, that's visual. Some sort of feel that way when it's supposed to look. Thank you. You're dismissed. You may go out for recess anyway. And if you want to see any of the handouts here. Oh, sorry, one more thing. I just got this morning. Christian Light is developing a questionnaire regarding special education. It's self-explanatory. If you're interested, why, come up here and help yourself to one. If you want to give feedback to provide to them to help them develop something for special education, you're dismissed.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.